there on the computer. I think it's time for us to get started. Thanks everyone for showing up. I know it's a little early. My name is Eric Boyd. I'm with Internet 2 and responsible for some of our CNN-related efforts in terms of rolling out the Advanced Layer 2 service. This panel this morning is called, I think, The Future of OpenFlow and SDN. So we're going to get started here with our panelists in just a second. I've asked Dan Schmidt on the end. He's one of our co-chairs, along with Denise Birkin, is the co-chair of our SDN working group, so he's going to moderate today's discussion. And I'll introduce the panelists. Just a brief word about sort of the relevance to the Internet 2 community. As many of you know, and we'll be further discussing some of the sessions this afternoon, Internet 2 has been aggressively tackling, looking at the SDN space, trying to incorporate some of the advanced technologies into our network offerings. In particular, our Advanced Layer 2 service is built atop a heterogeneous mixture of brocades and junipers. We've also been working closely with Cisco to evaluate their current product offerings as well. And a lot of the success we've had is through direct engagement with the various vendors and in terms of expressing the needs of the R&D community to them and working with them to get those needs met. There's also a lot of other ongoing initiatives. You know, I mean, in general, as Dave Lambert laid out, about a year and a half ago, you know, sort of the pillars of the innovation strategy, which is something we'll be talking about this afternoon. One of them is, you know, sort of ridiculous bandwidth on the gig. One of them is sort of opening up the network stack for SDN, the other being science DMZs. And so, you know, there's a lot of synergy between that mission statement, what the NSF has called for, and its this year's CCNIE solicitation sort of line up with that as well. And there's a lot of complementary efforts from the Office of Science and Technology in the White House, and from US Ignite, and the like. So I think this is an area of relevance both to how we operate the Internet 2 network and, more importantly, how the community operates the cell networks. Last week, some of you may have attended the Open Networking Summit, which I think had record attendance. It was quite interesting. Double from the year before and double from the year before that. So this is an area that's growing rapidly, and will be interesting to see how it evolves over the next year. So with that, Dan, do you want to come up and get started? Thank you.
Thanks, Eric, and thanks, everybody, for coming. So I'm Dan Schmidt. I work at Clemson in real life, and my background is in operating networks and mostly technical. So introduce our panelists, and I'll introduce you guys, and then I think we'll go in this order and say whatever you want to say. If you have any slides, we can do that. First, we've got Gary Berger from Cisco, who's the technical leader of advanced development. We've got Dave Meyer, who's the CTO, chief scientist at Brocade. And Tom Madu, who's the distinguished engineer at Juniper, focusing on SDN. So,
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you doing? Just curious, who was at the Open Network Summit last week? So, I asked to do a talk here about the future of OpenFlow and SDN, and of course, this is an emerging marketplace, and we see a huge disruption going on in our industry, trying to satisfy some of the optimization problems of the past. I'm going to just talk briefly about my observations about this disruption and sort of where we find ourselves in looking at the problem. So software has been at the heart of communication networks from the start. I mean, back in the day when we were first looking at ARPANET, we had been designing software to try and run DM processors. So this is nothing that's necessarily new in our field, but I think what we found is in the past that the integration and optimization of hardware platforms has created a block of innovation that we're trying to solve today. So the SDN community would like to think that SDN is defined as the physical separation of control and data plane. I want to make a point that we're not necessarily talking about management and operations in this talk, although that's extremely important. Automation and operating networks at scale is a cardinal piece of this SDN disruption, but I think today what we're talking about is a spectrum. So SDN should be looked at as a spectrum which encompasses distributed state distribution, as we know, decentralized approaches, all the way to complete separation of control and data plane. I think it's a lost opportunity for us if we don't take the knowledge that we've learned over the past 40 years and apply that to today's problems. So there's a couple of false assumptions about the way networks are architected today. Processor scalability is limited. Yes, it's limited today, primarily because of cost reasons, but there's nothing that keeps us from taking advantage of multi-core GPUs and NPUs. The fact that state distribution needs to be centralized, we obviously know there are advantages in learning and discovery on epidemic protocols that can be leveraged for operating networks. And brute force mechanisms such as match action are only one way to solve the problem. The current state of networking, I mean, I think we can all agree there's the identity crisis, and we have sort of one of the fellows who have investigated this to no end, the loci split problem, which is key to our mobility issues. The conflation of mechanism and policy. At the Open Network Summit, I think this was resonated over and over again. The fact that we encapsulate configuration state so close to the device that we don't allow the separation of policy. This is really what's keeping operations of the network at bay. This is probably all I'll talk about configuration management in networks. We have conflated state of ACLs and route maps and the like. Today's networks are based on oblivious and greedy-based algorithms, you know, SPF, PathLump. These have grown incredibly important in understanding because the networks themselves need to be optimized for today's consumer flow. There's also lost protocol semantics, lost references. So in the overlay models, VLANs becoming unimportant, Ether types, IP protocol. These are lost semantic meaning, and so what we find ourselves trying to grab context out of the network flow. Pathological protocol bugs, you're probably familiar with Jim Getty's buffer bloat, but there are other problems in IP fragmentation and such. And of course, the economic cliff. Transport pricing, transport costs are growing at an extraordinary rate while demand keeps increasing. What's funny is that we talk a lot about traffic engineering, we talk a lot about adaptive routing. This is core to sort of the decisions we've made. So this is back in 1976, where we decided, we knew that it was important to be adaptive. We knew that was important because flows were unpredictable, that we were going to make a trade-off. We were going to trade optimality for simplicity. So this is something that's core in our internet structure. Another problem in the SDN world is the scaling. Obviously, we've talked about centralized controllers. We're logically centralized controllers. But as we break the problem and scale the controllers out, we have the price of consensus. Consensus is the value that it's agreed upon by all the controllers. And this can actually be quantified. So the quantification here is based on a naive Paxos-based protocol. And we can see that it grows almost logarithmically. So what we're concerned here is that the scale of the network will increase the amount of consensus, which will cause invariably inconsistencies in the environment. So this is something that we obviously have to be careful of. And ideas that are starting to be promoted from T. Berlin and T. Labs is something called partial SDN deployments, which is, can we strategically put SDN-based models strategically in our networks that would give us the level of control that we're expecting, but without having to completely transition the whole environment over. So what we want is policy-driven control. We want security, adaptive routing. We want these elements that are hard to achieve today because of the tight coupling between the configuration state and the device. And this is an example, this is basically depicting the way we see the model of OpenFlow today. And I wanted to show this because you can see the interactions of the different ports and subsystems are quite complex. This makes reasoning about these systems very difficult. So in that, we have a problem of programming the network. And so from a paper called Formal Foundations of Software-Defined Networks by a team at Cornell, they've isolated that there are these pathologies in programming OpenFlow that we need to be careful of, because the understanding behavior of the environment by separating between the controller and the data plane is a very complex thing for a programmer to understand. And so as we actually expand the current models to add more vendor extensions, add different architectures in the devices, that is also going to increase the complexity for programming the networks. So in summary, this is a level of active research in the SDN world. Some problems that we are expecting to solve were born of accidental architecture and organic growth. So there's still a lot more to do. We need expressive languages with primitives that are easy for programmers to understand. We need compilers and testing frameworks and proofing engines to guarantee that the expectations of the rules that we're applying to the network are sound. We will see development of new chipsets, data path optimization, and kernel libraries. We certainly will see an increased view of commoditized hardware to accelerate packet performance. And we'll see active experimentation with large-scale deployments like Google and others who are driven towards stateless control, which doesn't meet every use case, but provides an active area of research. And fundamentally, we need to rethink the way we build communication. And this is an interesting community of people who are looking at the future. And what we've learned after 40 years of time, or we keep relearning after 40 years of time, is that the current architecture is flawed. It's flawed in many different ways. It's flawed in fact for we don't have mobility, we don't have security, we don't have proper separation of policy and mechanism, act policy, congestion control, error and flow control. We don't have these as variants and invariants that we can easily tune and optimize. So I leave it to you to ask the questions and try and talk to our panelists here about what they think about OpenFlow and SDN's future. Thank you.
Thanks, Gary. That was a good talk. Actually, it leads into my question because mine has nothing to do with any of this. As you might expect. For some reason I have to put now for something completely different on all my slides these days. I don't know what that means. But anyway, so here's what I wanted to talk about. What we're really trying to get at here, and Gary kind of outlined this at a different kind of granularity, is that we want systems that have scalability and involvability, right? And that's really at the bottom of all of this. And then I'll just do a quick tour through the SDN design space. I was calling this SDN Continuum, and Gary had a better slide than I had for that, so I'm glad I changed the name of it. So here's the obligatory, this is intended to be controversial and provocative, So what's scalability? What's evolvability? So scalability, if you ask somebody what is scalability, you get like a bunch of different kinds of answers. But really, this is what it is, at least from the systems, from the systems guys. It's basically robustness to changes in the size and complexity of the system as a whole. That's what we're trying to get at. And so then, what's evolvability? Well, evolvability is robustness to lineage, if you want to think about it biologically, but of the system to changes on longer timescales. And then, if you want to go further, I want to stay with these two, but if you want to go further, you can think of reliability as robustness to system component failures, efficiency as robustness to resource scarcity and modularity to rearrangement. So robustness is somehow key here. What is robustness? Robustness is a property of a system in which it is robust. So you always talk about robustness. So people think, about, oh, this is robust. This scales like that. All of this stuff. It's pretty much meaningless, right? You have to talk about robustness in terms of a property and that's invariant with respect to some kind of perturbation. So generally, you have a subjective function that has the property and the perturbation in it, and then you can talk about it. And then fragility is kind of the opposite of that. And fragility is really important in networking, especially in our networking. It's kind of a second-order effect. It's, you know, its response curve is always concave, and we can talk more about this later. It's really an interesting topic. And the important thing for us to notice here is that if you have these systems like the internet that's robust to one, it can be robust to one set of perturbations and fragile to another. And this is what's called RYF, or robust yet fragile behavior. And this is a signature of systems like the internet. Large systems that scale and are evolvable have this. So what's an example? I can remember exactly when this happened to me. We're building the UO campus network, and okay, you know, like everyone else, we put an interface into a building, right? And, you know, all the hosts in the building had DHCP, the default route, but now we wanted robustness to that failure of a single interface, so we put up another interface in the building or whatever we did, and VRRP or HSRP or whatever, so we created robustness to the failure of one interface, but we created the fragility to the protocol, the HSRP protocol, or the MAC sharing protocol, and that had bugs in it, and that failed. So we created robustness, but we uncovered another fragility, and this is a property. You can't escape this. This is a property of these systems. So here's another one. So in our, and we think about this as RYF trade-off. So RYF is what you want to take away from this. So a system, you know, this is just one I cooked up. So, you know, there's a better way to say this. So have you ever heard this optimization causes brittleness or optimization considered harmful? That's a compiled version of this rule, right? Or this behavior. Here's the site if you want to go read about it. This paper is actually pretty accessible. So here's the Fames curve. Robustness complexity curve is heavy-tailed. When I first drew this, I don't know where the source to this is, so I can't fix it. But really, you should have the robustness and complexity axes should be, as I said earlier, with respect to some property at least, and maybe a perturbation. But basically, what the curves, so if you're robust, you're over here on the left, right? And notice that this curve is concave. Right, where it's robust. I'm sorry, it's convex where it's robust on the left and concave where it's fragile. That's something to remember because all of these things behave this way. But basically, if you're over on the left side, you know, you're getting a pay raise, and if you're on the right, you have to find a new job. Because you're really screwed up. But, you know, I mean, basically a system, these systems like the internet need complexity to achieve robustness, but you can, you know, too much of a good thing, right? You know, things go badly wrong when you get over here on the right. And actually, you can never actually know this curve, right? It's sort of like, what is the probability distribution? You never know. But there are ways, because it's not explicit, but there are ways to detect whether or not the curve in some region is convex or concave. Basically, just geeking out a second. Jensen's inequality will tell you that. Type that in Wikipedia, you'll learn what it is. So, okay, so now what's complexity, right? Okay, so we figured out, okay, you know, we're making these trade-offs between robustness and complexity, but what's complexity? Complexity is really structure. You know, we talk all about complexity all the time. What is it? It's structure that's in these systems that's there to create robustness to uncertainty. And so if you look at the internet, a lot of the structure that's there is there for exactly that purpose. So keep that in mind, it's structure. So now, in talking about all this, I've tried to talk to a few people about this, and this is one thing that's come up, is that networks are incredibly general and expressive, you know, and you can peel it back in their graphs, right, and their annotated graphs and things like that. And it turns out that they're extremely common in nature, so, you know, your immune system, energy metabolism, transportation systems, we see the internet, of course, macroeconomies, forest ecology, the main sequence of burning hydrogen into, you know, helium, all of that stuff. Formation of galactic structures everywhere, networks everywhere. So it should come as no surprise that we study different you know, systems, and in particular biological systems, because we can actually get our hands on those pretty easily to try to get a deeper understanding of complexity and and what architectures provide these systems for scale, provide for scalability, evolvability in these contexts. So that's all cool. But what does it mean to us, right? I mean, us means, you know, NetOps, engineering, architects, people who are involved in networking. Why do we care? Okay, that's the next question. So, first off, let me give you what the key architectural takeaways should be. So, in the systems sciences, and this is multidisciplinary, it's turning out that there are fundamental building blocks that are being identified that are found in systems that scale and are evolvable. So, these are, I'll just call this one bow tie, and this is the one I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk a lot about it in all of these, but I mentioned ROIF complexity, massively distributed with robust control loops, where robust means the control theoretic version of robust, which means kind of risk-aware control loops. And, you know, you can contrast that with optimal control loops that are, they're susceptible to additive noise. They're highly layered, but they have layer violations. Like, you can look at something like in the TCP/IP, that's a layer violation. It's layered, but there's a layer violation. They have protocol-based architectures. So protocols are the way these systems, the internet, communicates with the external world. And then they have something called, most of them have something called degeneracy. We have, in the internet space, we have a limited version of it that we call, one-to-n redundancy, right? But degeneracy in sort of like in a biological system really means the functionality that any component does can be partially done by every or some set of components. So that's what it gives it some kind of evolvability. So here's the bow tie thing. So there's this really beautiful thing in systems biology, and there's a guy called Kirshner who wrote a really great paper in which he described this idea of constraints that deconstrain. And the idea here is, on the left side of this thing, you have the chemical environment that a cell's living in, for example. And then you have this very rigid and efficient, basically information processing knot, they called it. So in the middle. And then everything on the right can evolve at whatever rate it wants to because this other thing in the middle here is stable. So they call this the knot, right? And a good example of this is the reaction and the metabolites that are in your core. Metabolism, ATP metabolism, basically. Every cell on Earth uses ATP. So you can grow all kinds of interesting biological stuff because you don't have to mess with that, right? And there's a paper here that if you're interested in this, you can... But wait a second. I mean... If you turn this thing on the side and you kind of look at it this way, you go, oh, well, I've seen this before. I think Dering was maybe the first. Wasn't this originally called Dering's hourglass? He drew this a long time ago. And he didn't have all this other thinking. But, you know, this is the kind of structure we find in systems that scale and are evolved. So hourglass, if you see things as horizontally layered, you get an hourglass. You get a bow tie. If you see them as vertically layered, you get an hourglass. So we're getting it. So now I'm going to just go on to the SDN design space and map it back onto this. So this was a slide that I had that was called SDN Continuum, and so I'm glad I changed it because Gary's was so much better. I can't really draw that well, so this is about the extent of my ability to draw in PowerPoint. And I have the patience to get it better. to be honest. But I kind of looked at this and I go, hey, so when we're at ONS, people are saying, and I think like Guru and all the people who were talking about SDN, they were talking about this thing on the left, which I'm calling data plane SDN. So OpenFlow SDN, for example. What do you have here? You have complete separation of the control and data plane. You have at least logically centralized control. And you have open interfaces in the control plane, or to the data plane. So that's, that's OpenFlow SDN. That's kind of a design point that's on the left side, if you will. This is multidimensional space, but it's drawn linearly here. And then in the middle, somewhere, you have something that I'm calling control plane SDN, and this is just where you make the existing distributed control plane programmable. So this is, PCE, RFS, and all that stuff going on. And maybe even NetConf, SNMP, vendor SDKs, things like that. And then you can go further to the right, and you can just have what I'm calling overlay SDN, where basically you don't care about the network that much. What you want is what? You want 32, 64, 128, ECMP by 10, or whatever you want. And then you just put your own control plane up over the top of it. So you're not messing with the existing control plane or the existing forwarding plane you're putting there. All of these things are forms of SDN. Now, admittedly, the ONF, I don't think, actually sees it that way, unless you look at Rob Sherwood's recent slides from the ONF, our architecture design team are kind of coming around to this. So if you put it all together. So OpenFlow SDN is appearing to me to be proposing a new waste. But it's not clear where, and it's not clear if it's really a waste, but it seems to be doing that. Control plane SDN just makes the existing control plane more programmable. That in itself has its own, you know, pitfalls. Like if you think about this I2RS stuff, you have open loop control, and we haven't seen that before. At least not the same way. And then OpenFlow SDN or overlay SDN, you could think of it as an application from the perspective of the control plane. And you know, the waste of this thing, it doesn't care, right? So this is all interesting, and this is all going on. Nobody's really analyzing this among these dimensions, and I'm kind of thinking, wow, this is really what it's really all about, you know? And I'll just say one other thing. I mean, how many people have written software? How many people have used software? Okay, so first off, writing software is an inherently volatile and random process, and that's why we have XP. In fact, you know, I found out the other day, not that XP, Extreme Program. It's called XP, they call it XP, right? That's legitimate. Okay, so Agile, how about this? Agile. But the process of building software is inherently unstable and flaky. And the software that comes out of it is always flaky. I mean, that's just, we know that. Now, what we're going to have is, now we have SDN and everything's software. And everybody can write it. And everybody can interact with the network. So what does that mean? Well, it means this. It means that, you know, now we have open loop control software, and we have Moore's logic, so we have an incredible ability to just create stuff. So that means that my feeling is that the real thing that you're going to get out of SDN is an increase in randomness, uncertainty, and volatility coming from above. Below, it's not so much, right, because it's hardware, and the time cycles are, you know, I mean, how long does it take to build an ASIC, 18 to 24 months? Then I got to build a compiler for it. And, you know, it takes some time. It's got its own hysteresis, but software, not really. You know, so you're going to see some wild stuff. I'll give one example here because I want to get off and let these other guys go. But who's heard of SpotCloud? Right, this is a spot market for compute resources. They're really clever. What they did was they built a connector, buyer connector, a seller connector for OpenStack, right? And be anywhere on the planet and say, here's some compute resources. You want it? You can have it, right? So now I build, you know, I have some stuff on EC2, and then I have some stuff on SpotCloud. And then what I do is I put some virtual routers inside this stuff, and I build a network on top of that, and then I build my own cloud on top of that. And this has happened a couple of times already. And the cloud's distributed over the whole planet, right? And nobody knows where except for the owner of the cloud, right? So how do these guys manage their bandwidth, or what's the traffic matrix, or all of that stuff? Well, it's not knowable. Thank you for software. So this was the first slide of the talk that I gave at Apricot. And basically, the bottom line here is SDN is about uncertainty and volatility, guys. And you're going to see a lot of it. And the thing is, I sent these slides off to Sean Duran because I wanted to get his thing. And he gave me a lot of feedback, but one of the things that he said was, I was saying, you know, how do we take advantage of this? Because, you know, there are systems in which randomness and volatility are actually the substrate of what makes it work. You need it. You know, evolution, for example, the raw material, right? So it's not unheard of. And he just said, forget the take advantage stuff. Let's just see if we can survive it. So that was awesome. All right, so.
All right. Good morning. Still all awake? I unfortunately don't have any slides. Unfortunately, when I was asked to do this talk a couple weeks ago, I said the slides are optional. So optional. So I jotted down some notes. Hopefully it doesn't suck too bad. But anyway, I was thinking about kind of what I was going to say during the introduction over the last couple of days. And I've been working on SDN at Juniper for about a year now, and kind of seen things change radically in just a year. And a lot of it is sort of our understanding of what's going on in the space. And prior to this, I worked at CA, where I built infrastructure management, network management apps for about a year. And, you know, my perspective on SDN is a little bit different. I mean, I've built routers at Cisco and some in the past, too. And, you know, and I was thinking about the question that this panel has asked, the fundamental question. And I think that we should actually change the question a little bit from what is the future of OpenFlow to kind of a combination of like what Dave was saying about what is the future of fragility in the software that we use to program the networks, as well as what is the future of network operations and applications, I guess. Because I think that's really where we're going to get to. I mean, I think OpenFlow is a means to an end. It's a means to an end. There are many ways of programming the state of the network, and I think OpenFlow is just one of those, and it's a continually evolving sort of component of the bigger puzzle of options that we have here. And then, you know, this, you know, where we really want to focus on, I think, is some of the things that actually both folks just kind of articulated. You know, where it gets down to is, in fact, you know, software design and network design, and how does some of these tools that we have today, you know, let you do that stuff, and how do they evolve, or how do they let you destroy your network if you're not careful? I think, you know, where we're going is this brave new world where we're going to allow applications to funge more of the network state than they were in the past. And this is, while it's very exciting and very interesting, it's also, you know, adds potential volatility to the puzzle if we're not careful. And so, you know, where I think we've evolved to in the last, year and a half, as an industry in this space, is gotten to a point where, for example, again, if we focus on just OpenFlow, I think we've got a very narrow kind of view of the world, especially at the ONF, where, you know, OpenFlow is SDN, is, you know, et cetera. And I think that's just a narrow slice of this pie. Concepts like the control and data plane separation, I think this is a very interesting area right now, especially for research. I mean, stuff that we're doing internally, but also a lot of other people are working on in the research space. I think it's very interesting. I mean, one of the interesting things I've kind of stumbled on in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 months now, I'm writing a book with Ken Gray, who was here from Juniper. And one of the things that we stumbled upon was kind of thinking through all of this stuff is that people are just saying, well, let's separate the control and data plane. And so we actually went back and analyzed how that was done in the past. This is not a new thing, right? We did this, you know, when I, you know, way back when at Cisco, I was in that group that, you know, sort of invented MPLS and built that through. And one of the, you know, we had built control of data separation there. And even before that, there are other examples. And I think we actually hadn't thought through how we were making the system more fragile, actually, by doing that, or unpredictable. And like Dave was saying, that it actually, you know, on the one hand, there's some goodness there. On the other hand, you introduce some potential pitfalls. And I think, you know, there's some interesting research going on today about when you separate the control plane from the data plane, you should ask yourself a couple of questions. For example, how much of the control plane can you actually separate from the data plane? My conjecture is you can't separate it all. And there's a lot of really good examples. If you think through, forget about the sort of toy lab cases. If you look at actual deployments of a centralized controller infrastructure for a network, what happens at the edges? What happens with live traffic? Just take Mac learning as one example. Think about the scalability of that, and you'll see how the controller companies have altered their sort of pitches in the last year. You know, doing the simple, you know, the basic, you know, the the original kind of open flow architecture we had about a year and a half ago is pretty much gone away if you want to run this kind of thing in a production network. The other thing is, I think if you analyze the question of how far away can the control plane be from the data plane, that's another interesting place, and I think there's some exciting research going on in this area that I found too, which I don't have a citation. Sorry for that. But the distance between a control plane and the data plane and how fast things can react actually makes a difference. And I think this is something that we have to think carefully about. So while there are certain sort of slower or time lag components, I think that you can move further away, there are other components that you really can't if you want things to operate the way they do. So again, think back of, you know, the original control and data separation on a typical, you know, Juniper, Cisco switch, whatever, is the separation of the control plane and data plane is like less than 12, 24 inches, right? And there are issues just with that level of separation. Now imagine being a kilometer away or whatever, right? Think through those things. So that's kind of one of the things that I'd like to kind of point out. The other thing that I've noticed in the last year is the evolution of controller technology, sort of along those lines as well. And, you know, I think we've gotten to the point now where enough research and sort of analysis of controllers has gotten to the point where what we've realized is that the controller itself, the sort of infrastructure, as they call it, of the controller, is quickly evolving into sort of like kind of how Linux evolved. There's basically one kernel now, or there will be. And so this is kind of my introduction to the Open Daylight project that I'm working on, which is a Linux Foundation-sponsored open source, SDN controller project. And I think where we're going to get to is the point where that sort of middle layer of controller is free, is open source, and everybody knows, you know, how to build it and assumes it's there. Where the innovation is going to get to is the north and south parts of above that. You know, I think ultimately where we want to get to in terms of innovation in this space is, you know, addressing that kind of fragility aspect by having a controller that actually works correctly, that can talk to the network and abstract certain things from the network. And I was talking to a customer about this yesterday, and, you know, they said, well, we're really into, you know, having open flow control paths that, you know, we can have like a science DMZ attach applications to. But we've talked to our researchers and these guys are like scientific researchers and, you know, programmers in that regard. They know nothing about networks and they don't want to know anything about networks per se. And they're right. I mean, this is my experience from working at CA. You know, I mean, the engineers that I worked with, they are barely can spell IP. I mean, they wrote really good other stuff, but, you know, controlling the network itself is actually not for the faint of heart in a lot of cases. And so the controller infrastructure, I think, has got to get to the point where the APIs that are exposed follow much in the line of what we did with RSVP way back, but actually this will be a much more scalable way of doing that. And then, you know, not necessarily hiding the complexity of the network from the applications, but abstracting it away where, in most cases where they don't want to see it, where they want to have some level of customization, but not have to understand how to do CSPF, for example, which is pretty complicated and, you know, piece of information you have to understand before you're going to start toying with network paths. So I think that's where the, you know, there's going to be some cool innovation going forward and some cool research as well. And then, you know, where that gets us to is finally one of the concepts that we've been working on and sort of trying to explore over the last, like, 18 months or so, is the control feedback loop, the sort of open loop between applications and the network. And how to actually facilitate that. And I think, you know, again, to answer the kind of question of the panel, open flow is kind of a means to an end down here, but completing the feedback loop between the applications and whatever you're using to program the network paths is key, and that's the control. And again, something like the Open Daylight Project Controller is actually, I think, a fine place to innovate and a cool place to innovate because it's open source and, you know, everybody in this room can contribute to that project, which I think is cool. So that's about it for me, and hopefully that'll get your creative juices going and you can throw some fruit in us now. Thanks.
So thanks very much, guys. I've got a couple questions just to kind of set the stage, and then we'll open it up to the audience. You guys have things you really want to say, just start waving your arms around and interrupt me. One of the things I heard you guys talk a lot about was forms of SVN other than OpenFlow, and I wanted us to talk a little bit about that. So